So this evening we'd like to continue speaking from Shikshastikam. So this will be sloka number 3. You can repeat. Trinadapi sunichena.
Trinadapi sunichena.
Haroreva shahishnuna.
Haroreva shahishnuna.
Amanina manadena.
Amanina manadena.
Kirtaniya sadahari.
Kirtaniya sadahari.
Trinadapi sunichena.
Trinadapi sunichena.
The downtrodden grass.
Sunichena.
Being Lord.
Taro.
Then a tree.
Eva.
Like.
Sahishnuna.
With tolerance.
Amanena.
Without being puffed up.
By false pride.
Manadena.
Giving respect to all.
Kirtaniya.
To be chanted.
Sada.
Always.
Hare.
The holy name of the Lord.
Translation. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, "The devotee who chants the holy name offenselessly is adorned with 4 very special qualities: a natural meekness and humility because of his complete detachment from matter, a pure compassion unencumbered by envy, a spotless heart free from mundane false prestige, and a respectful attitude towards everyone." So, of course, this is probably the most famous of all of the Shikshastikam prayers. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj has quoted this verse, and he has advised that devotee should string this verse on a thread and wear it round his neck for constant remembrance. So in the second verse, you will remember that Lord Chaitanya was describing the reason why we are unfortunate, that we have no attraction for chanting the holy name of the Lord. So in this third verse, Lord Chaitanya has come to a higher level of Krishna, higher level of chanting. The second verse was describing our problem, our failings in chanting the holy name, that we do not chant the name purely, but we chant with offenses, we chant sometimes with apathy or lethargy or distraction, inattention, different types of inattention. But in this verse, Lord Chaitanya has said, "Kirtaniya sadahari." We should always chant the holy name. The devotee, he's describing the devotee who is constantly chanting the holy name. So So this is chanting the name without offense, that Lord Chaitanya is bringing chanting of the holy name from Nam Abbas and Nam Aparad. He's brought it to Shuddhana, the pure name, the pure chanting of the holy name. And he has described the qualification to chant the name purely. Four qualities. First of all, that one should consider oneself to be as insignificant as the grass. This is appropriate because one who is in the bodily concept of life, who is attached to the gross and subtle body, will be full of false pride. We will not be able to feelingly chant the holy name. Chanting of the name of the Lord requires that one must be devoid of all attachment to this body, whether gross or subtle. The example of the comparison to grass is very appropriate because we all know we can walk on the grass. The grass is trodden on by everyone, does not offer any complaints. So the ego of the grass is compatible to its physical position. But we ourselves, our own ego tends to be more in relation to our gross and physical or subtle body. Our ego should be compatible to our real self. The true self of the living entity, of course, is not this body or this mind, but it's the soul. And the soul is described as being 100th of the tip of a hair. Very tiny, insignificant. This is, if we have consciousness of our real self as a spiritual being, then we will also be devoid of false ego, understanding our own insignificant position. I remember in Srila Prabhupada's time, there was one devotee who was managing the Los Angeles Center. And being in charge of a center like Los Angeles, where there was many devotees and a lot of activities, he became quite somewhat full of his position and developed some ego in taking that responsibility. So Srila Prabhupada explained to him that this whole cosmic manifestation of the material world is simply 1/4 compared to the spiritual world. And in this whole material creation, there are countless universes, countless numbers of universes, all which emanate from the body of Mahavishnu. And within each universe, there are countless numbers of planets. Within this planetary system, there is one planet called Earth. And on this planet Earth, there is one not very significant country called USA. And in USA, there is one state called California. In California, there is one city called Los Angeles. In Los Angeles, there's one street there called Watsika Avenue, which happens to be the street where the Hare Krishna temple is. And in this Watsika Avenue, there are many houses. There's one Hare Krishna temple. And in that Hare Krishna temple, there are many devotees. And this, you think you are the center of this whole cosmic creation. So, in reality, our position in this material world is very insignificant, just like pieces of grass. So this is one quality, but one quality... I think it could go down a little. So the second quality is more tolerant than the tree. The trees, of course, are wonderful examples of tolerance, and that tolerance also shows their compassionate nature. The trees offer fruits and flowers for the service of others. They also provide shelter. People can come and chop them down. They will not protest. They will continue to offer their whatever, their firewood, their fruits, everything is offered for the service of others. So in this verse, Lord Chaitanya said we should be more tolerant than the tree. This is actually qualification of a devotee, a Vaishnava, that he is full of compassion for others. We say Vaishnava is paradukha dukhi, very unhappy to see others suffering, not concerned for their own happiness. In the material world, the tendency is to only think of our own self, what makes us happy. But tolerance requires that we will accept insults and abuse without being disturbed. We have nice examples of tolerance. Prahlad Maharaj, for example, is a nice example of a tolerant devotee. His father, Hiranyakashipu, of course, subjected him to many tests. Prahlad simply tolerated and tried to give him Krishna consciousness. Maharaj Ambarish was also very tolerant with Durvasa Muni. The Brahmana from Avanti Desh in Srimad Bhagavatam is a nice example of tolerance. How much he had to tolerate, how he was abused. And similarly also Sukadeva Goswami had to tolerate. Sometimes people would throw stones and rocks at him, abuse him in many different ways, but he was not disturbed. So tolerance is an important quality of devotees. We also have to cultivate tolerance. Srila Prabhupada was also very tolerant in delivering Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also tolerant. There's a wonderful pastime described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. On the occasion, Lord Chaitanya visiting Varanasi, that at that time, of course, as it is today, Varanasi is not a place of Vaishnavas. It is more a place of the Shankara Vaishnava, Shankara Sannyasis. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gone to Varanasi to meet his devotees, Tapana Mishra, Chandrasekhar. And while he was there in Varanasi, he engaged in Sankirtan, chanting the holy names of the Lord. But the Mayavadi sannyasis, seeing him chanting and dancing, they would simply criticize him that he is supposed to be a sannyasi, but he is behaving like some emotional, sentimental person. And Chaitanya Charitamrita describes how Chandrasekhar and Tapana Mishra came crying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we cannot tolerate to hear the abuse. So a devotee can tolerate injustices against his own self, but not against others. For example, although Lord Chaitanya has quoted this verse that one should be more tolerant than a tree, but when Jaghai and Madhai sat on Lord Nityananda and brought blood from the head of Lord Nityananda, immediately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to that place as angry as fire, and he was ready to destroy Jaghai and Madhai. So there is no contradiction in the behavior. The point is that one will accept injustices against one's own self with tolerance, But one cannot tolerate to see others, other Vaishnavas being treated in the wrong way, particularly one's own spiritual teacher. One cannot tolerate to see that. What should one do in such circumstances when we see that others are criticizing the Vaishnavas or criticizing the spiritual master? First thing is we should try to defeat it. Try to defeat their arguments by reason and logic. If we cannot do that, then we can end our own life. If that's not practical, we hope it's not practical, then we should leave that place. So that is usually what should happen. Simply leave the place. Do not stay around to hear criticism of the Vaishnavas. So, while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Varanasi, he was certainly unhappy to see his devotees in this condition. Chandrasekhar, Tapana Mishra, they were both ready. They were thinking to give up their own life because they could not leave the place, and neither could they defeat the arguments of these sannyasis. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arranged that some brahmana would come and invite him to come and dine with the other sannyasis of Varanasi. Mahaprabhu, although he was initiated in Shankara Sampradaya, of course, he did not associate with the Shankara sannyasis because he is chanting Hare Krishna. The Shankara sannyasis criticized Mahaprabhu that he should be studying Vedanta. He should not be just singing and dancing. Even at the present times, I have the experience, because I preach in a Buddhist country, in Bangkok, for example. It's a Buddhist country, Thailand. So in Bangkok, when I go in our kirtan, chanting and dancing in the street, saying kirtan, then people are surprised. How is it? He's a monk. How is it he's singing and dancing? Buddhist monks, they're not supposed, they cannot do that. That is considered some emotional, sentimental exhibition. So sometimes, even today, that criticism is there. Taiwan also, we've seen the same thing. Sometimes we have kirtan, and while I'm chanting and dancing, the Buddhist monks, they also come and they like, but they won't dance. They enjoy the samba. They say, yeah, very nice. Yeah. They appreciate that this is very good meditation. Today we are having very good meditation. Anyway, 500 years ago it was a very serious thing. Mahaprabhu was initiated in Shankara Sampradaya, but he is chanting and dancing. So he was invited to go to this home of this brahmana and accept food there with the other Mayavadi sannyasis. And when he got there to the home, the place was full with the Mayavadi sannyasis. And Mahaprabhu came in and he washed his feet and then took a seat in the place where he washed his feet, which was very surprising. And the leader of the sannyasis, who was known by the name Prakasananda Saraswati, he was shocked to see such humility. This is humility, a very nice example of humility. Actually, Mahaprabhu, first of all, offered his obeisances to all the Mayavadi sannyasis. He bowed down. Usually the sannyasis don't offer obeisances to each other because they're all Narayan, right? So Narayan doesn't need to bow down to Narayan. But Mahaprabhu, he bowed down. He offered his respects to them, and then he sat in this unclean place. So seeing this display, the leader of the sannyasis, Prakasananda Saraswati, came there and took him by the hand and brought him into the center of the assembly. This was certainly a blessing for Prakasananda Saraswati. Prabhupada writes, this was Agyata Sukriti, that he had behaved, the Prakasananda Saraswati had been respectful to Mahaprabhu. So this was certainly to his advantage and was to give him the opportunity to engage in further devotional service. So Mahaprabhu came into the center of the assembly with Prakasananda Saraswati, and then Prakasananda Saraswati questioned him. Well, first of all, Mahaprabhu said, no, I am a sannyasi, I am from a low order of sannyas. I should not sit in the assembly like you. You are a big man. I am from a low order. I am insignificant. I am not a very qualified sannyasi. You are a great sannyasi, like this. But Prakasananda said that, I know you are initiated by Keshava Bharati in Shankara Sampradaya, that you are you have got good initiation. You are also, of course, Shankara Sampradaya. To be a sannyasi in Shankara Sampradaya, you must be from Brahmana family. Only Brahmanas can take sannyas in their Sampradaya. So they knew Mahaprabhu was from a Brahmana family. He was initiated by a Shankara sannyasi, Keshava Bharati. He was of a good standing. Why you're behaving in this way? Why you're singing and dancing like a sentimentalist? Why you're not studying Vedanta? Mahaprabhu said, my spiritual master said, I am a foolish person and I cannot understand Vedanta. He told me I should simply chant the holy name. This is an example of Srinada P. Sanichena, accepting the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. Mahaprabhu describes the chanting of the holy name, the qualifications of the chanting of the holy name, in this verse, that one must be more lower than the blade of grass, more tolerant than the tree, offering respects to others and willing to give all respect. Not expecting any respect for oneself, but offering all respect to others. In teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada, in describing this incident, he also mentions in his, in quoting this verse, he said, one becomes qualified to chant the holy name and also qualified to study Vedanta. Because Prakasananda Saraswati was saying that you should study Vedanta, but actually the person who is chanting the holy name, he has understood the real conclusion of Vedanta. Not that one who is chanting the holy name has no understanding of Vedanta, but the conclusion of Vedanta is that one should chant the holy name. Sometimes people, however, take this instruction of Lord Chaitanya in the wrong way. Prabhupada writes how there are a class of sahajas who simply chant and never understand, never study Vedanta. They never study Vedanta. They simply chant the holy name and they have no knowledge of Vedanta. So that is not correct. In the same way, neither is it correct to simply study Vedanta and not chant the holy name. Both have to be there. There must be both study of Vedanta and chanting of the holy name. Of course, in our Krishna conscious society, our study of Vedanta is in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the natural commentary on Vedanta. And all of the acharyas, all of the Vaishnava acharyas, they have all given commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. It's Prabhupada quotes, of course, many different places. Baladeva Vijayabhusan's commentary, which is called Govinda Bhashya, and he also dedicates his commentary on Bhagavad Gita to that Govinda Bhashya. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya explained that studying of Vedanta is important, but one who is chanting the holy name, he is also understood the conclusion of Vedanta. The conclusion of Vedanta is to know Krishna. Vedanta, the end of knowledge. And the end of knowledge is to know Krishna. Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matha sarvam vartate vimatva vajante ma buddhava samandha. Krishna is saying, everything comes from me. Everything material and spiritual comes from me. Krishna is the origin of everything. And one who understands this, then they will worship Krishna with proper love and devotion. Our worship of Krishna is performed through chanting His holy name. So in this way, the teachings of Mahaprabhu are revealed. He is showing us how to chant the holy name. Lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than the tree, offering all respects to others. In the material world, where the tendency is so great to want to be respected and not want to give respect. So cultivating this quality of not expecting to be honored. This of course is also in Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter. Krishna lists items of knowledge, and he mentions the first quality of knowledge, amanitvam adambitvam. First quality, amanitvam, amanena, is offering respects to others, being humble, humility. This is the first item of knowledge. And Prabhupada explains the meaning of humility in the Bhagavad Gita as not being too anxious for that satisfaction of being honored by others. So this is a very exact, very clear explanation of what it means to be humble, to want to give, not to expect respect for ourselves. And at the same time, offering, be willing to offer respects to others. This is, of course, another great challenge to us, to have to give respect to others and not to be respected ourselves. A genuine disciple will offer all respect to the spiritual teacher. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati himself was a great scholar, very learned in many languages and very expert in explaining all the shastras. But he accepted a spiritual master who was almost illiterate. He had realized all the conclusions of the scriptures by hearing them, but he was not highly educated anywhere in comparison to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. However, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati accepted Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj as his eternal spiritual master. So surrendering to a spiritual master is certainly a great challenge to our ego, because it requires us to sacrifice. It requires us to offer respects to someone. Therefore, we find materialistic people, they're very shocked to see someone commit themselves to become a disciple of some other person. They cannot understand this relationship. The value of the spiritual master-disciple relationship is that the spiritual master can take away the false pride of the disciple. Surrendering to the spiritual master, therefore, is a very important limb of devotional service, because it takes away our false pride. We recognize someone as our superior. In material life, we're not willing to admit that someone's superior to us. We want to try to knock away the superiors and take their place. There was that example, Prabhupada was in Japan and he met with the different people from the printing company. Prabhupada had gone to Japan to print books, and he was given very nice treatment at the printing press company. All of the directors came and sat with him in the boardroom to discuss the printing of the books. So each of the different directors gave their name cards, and the youngest director, his name card was on the bottom. So all of the senior directors, they eventually left the room, and Srila Prabhupada and his disciples, a few disciples, were remaining with the youngest of the directors. So then Prabhupada asked this youngest director, "What is your goal in life?" So he took his name card out from the bottom and put it on the top. A very clear way of explaining what his goal in life was. And of course this is very common all over the world. Everyone would have this goal, get to the top and be number one. But in spiritual life, the highest what is the highest position in the material world is the lowest in the spiritual world. The more we have that position in the material world, the more difficult it is for us to understand our eternal relationship with Krishna as his servant. So, we can understand something of the significance of this verse, offering all respects and not expecting any respect for ourselves. A genuine disciple will not change or not try to surpass the message of his own spiritual teacher, but he will simply continue to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Sometimes you get people who think they can introduce some new mantra, some better mantra, some more powerful method of self-realization. But our business is not to surpass the previous acharyas. Our business rather is to honor them and to glorify them by supporting and following their message, preaching their message. Of course, that example was also seen when Mahaprabhu discussed with Balabhacharya that Balabha at one point had written some commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was saying that my commentary has surpassed even Sridhar Swami's commentary. But Lord Chaitanya was a friend of Balabhadra. They were friends and he could relate to him in this friendly way. So he told him, he said that it is not one should be a faithful wife, Swami. The Swami means husband. He said one should not be a prostitute. A wife should be faithful to her husband, faithful to the Swami. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya was telling, it's not your business to surpass the previous acharyas. It's our business to support them and to glorify whatever has been done by the previous acharyas. And similarly with this chanting of the holy name, we cannot come up with some new mantra. It may be a very nice tune, it may have a very nice musical sound and so on, but it is not our business just to satisfy the senses with some nice sound vibration. We follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, supporting their instructions, offering all respects and not expecting respect for ourselves. This does not mean that sometimes the spiritual master will have to correct the disciple and point out defects, just as we see Lord Chaitanya's own spiritual master telling him, "You are a foolish person. You cannot understand Vedanta." Of course, Lord Chaitanya had understood Vedanta. Lord Chaitanya had already explained Vedanta philosophy to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And here in Varanasi also we will see that Lord Chaitanya, if you study this chapter, 7th chapter of Adi Lila, Lord Chaitanya also explains Vedanta philosophy to Prakasananda Saraswati. So Lord Chaitanya understands perfectly the conclusion of Vedanta. But in making this statement to Prakasananda Saraswati and the Mayavadi sannyasis, he is making the point that Vedanta is not for simply for speculation. The purpose of Vedanta is to bring us to devotional service. If one studies Vedanta without engaging in devotional service, then it is useless. It is simply a waste of time. One is simply under the material energy. So Lord Chaitanya was therefore speaking in this way, that he could not understand Vedanta, he should simply chant the holy name. Chanting the holy name is the essence of religious principles. Even one is born in the family of dog eaters. If he is chanting the holy name without offense, it is understood that in previous lives he has already studied all of the scriptures. He has already acquired all of the good qualities of the Aryans, visited all the holy places. Because only in this way is he able to chant the holy name. He's not simply chanting, but it's kirtaniya sada hari, that constant chanting. So this is the point, constant chanting. This is the perfection of chanting. Of course, this is almost like uttama adhikari vision, that seeing others all engaged in Krishna's service. For the madhyam adhikari, he has to preach and he has to make distinction. He will not just simply offer respects to others, but he has to point out defects in others. He has to see defects. This is the business of the preacher. Uttama Adhikari thinks everyone's already engaged in Krishna's service. Therefore, Trinadapi Sunichin, offer all respects to everyone. They're all engaged in Krishna's service. He is just chanting the holy name. He can constantly chant. But for the purpose of preaching, one has to come down to the Madhyam platform and see distinction. We see that some people are not engaged in Krishna's service. And we see that people can also improve their devotional service. So one has to come to this Madhyam platform making distinction. And making distinction means sometimes we will have to point out defects, criticize. Not that this should be taken in a bad way, but we should see it for our purification. Just as when the spiritual master criticizes, points out defects in the disciples, we should think, oh, we should not feel hurt that, oh, my spiritual master chastised me. We should feel pleasure. Prabhupada described how his own spiritual master chastised him. That on one occasion Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was lecturing and Srila Prabhupada was sitting listening when the person behind him tapped his shoulder and Prabhupada turned round to see what he wanted. So immediately his Guru Maharaj interrupted and stopped the lecture and said, first of all to the man who was sitting behind Prabhupada, said, do you think you have purchased me with your 50 rupee donation? And then he said to our own Srila Prabhupada, and do you want to come up here and give the lecture? So Prabhupada said these words were like nectar to me. He was not hurt by this, but he thought this is nectar, that my spiritual master cares so much for me that he's helping me to see my own defects. So this is important for us to understand how we must be tolerant, offering respects, not expecting respect. Are there any questions or comments on this verse?
Why is it important to
read the Vedanta?
Read Vedanta? Yes. We said reading Vedanta means reading books like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. So, if we simply chant the holy name and do not understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then we will not develop the proper understanding of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. We will not be able to properly understand the knowledge of the science of devotional service. We may be chanting the holy name, but to chant the holy name purely, we have to also have some understanding of the philosophy. And if we understand the philosophy, then we will be able to improve the quality of our chanting, and we'll chant the holy name with more care and attention. Just simply chanting the holy name without understanding why we chant, that will not be very good. Just simply chanting, but why are you chanting? I don't know, my spiritual master, I have a guru, he told me to do it, you know, I do it. If you do it, of course it's very good, but because we have a mind, and because we're not pure yet in our chanting, therefore we have to hear some knowledge about Krishna. We have to hear Krishna's teachings, Krishna's instruction. We have to understand the importance of chanting the holy name. Not that we just only chant and don't know why we're chanting, what our goal is, what are the rules in chanting, what are the principles, what are the different levels in chanting, what has to be avoided in chanting, different things. Just like there are four types of people who come to Krishna consciousness. Chaturvida
bhajante maam janah sukritino arjuna ato jignyasur artarthi jnani cha bharatarshava.
So there is the person in distress and the person in search of some wealth, the person who is curious and the one who is in search of knowledge. So if these four people, Lord Krishna explains that the one who is most dear to him is the one who has some knowledge of him. We may come to Krishna, we are chanting in distress, but once the distress goes, if we don't have knowledge of Krishna, once the distress is over, we'll think I don't need to chant anymore. And similarly, the curious person, once his questions are answered, he may be chanting, say, well, I've chanted Hare Krishna, now I know about it. Thank you. Bye-bye. And the person in search of wealth, he may get some wealth, he gets a job, he meets somebody, comes to the program, meets somebody, gets a job, gets some financial opportunities, so things okay. Krishna's answered my prayers. And we think that's the goal of chanting. And one may be chanting, you think, well, now I'm chanting very good, my chanting is good, I don't need to chant anymore because I've already chanted very good, I've chanted very nice. So like that, if we just have this kind of understanding, we will think that this, you know, chanting, I've done it, you know, we can give it up because we don't have the proper knowledge. So having some good understanding, if we have this knowledge, we will never give up Krishna consciousness. No matter what happens, no matter where we go, if we have this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, we can never forget. Even though sometimes people come to Krishna consciousness and they do go away, but that knowledge remains with them, and they do have that taste for the holy name, and eventually they have to come back and again take up the process of Krishna consciousness. An eternal process.
Maharaj,
yes?
Can we apply this verse in giving you long devotees?
Certainly. But it's not very easy to get to apply this verse in dealing with non-devotees. Usually, we want to make non-devotees into devotees. Is that your idea in dealing with them?
No, I think that if you apply this to non-devotees, it can be sort of detrimental.
If we ask people who are not devotees to be humble, they'll say, if I'm humble, people will push me around and walk all over me. Is that your point?
Yeah.
Like that? Okay. Yes. Prabhupada, of course, tells this story about the snake, that Narada Muni made the snake into the devotee. So he said, now you're a devotee, you cannot bite anyone. So then the snake said, okay, yeah, I won't bite. But then the children saw the snakes not biting and they were teasing it, right? So then the snake came back to Narada Muni and said, I'm having a terrible time, you know, these children are giving me, they're really driving me crazy, you know. So Narada Muni said, I said you couldn't bite anyone, but I never said you couldn't show your teeth to them, you know, or show your fangs to them. So when the children came to tease, and the snake rose up and, you know, then the children all ran away. So like that, sometimes we have to sometimes not let people walk all over us, you know. Being humble doesn't mean that we let people push us around, but rather we have to do whatever's necessary for Krishna's service. Humility, and sometimes we have the wrong idea what it means to be humble. Prabhupada was humble, but he was also very aggressive in spreading Krishna consciousness. We have to do what is necessary for Krishna's service. Not that we just let everybody walk around and push us around. You know, we don't distribute our books all over the world to go out and distribute books. It takes humility, but at the same time one has to be bold. One has to combine that humility along with boldness, courage, going out and approaching people, trying to introduce them, give them books, trying to preach to people. Oh, this is in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It tells about how there was once some Brahmana who was a very big moneylender or businessman, and he had a lot of wealth, but he was very miserly. He was a grihastha initially, and he had a lot of wealth, but he was very miserly. He wouldn't give his family any money even, and they were all deprived. His servants were all suffering like anything. He had so much wealth, but he did not like to spend it. Then somehow it happened that he lost all of his wealth. Somebody cheated him. Anyway, it was all taken from him. And when he lost all of his wealth, you know, he had no friends. Everybody hated him, because when he had money, he used it. He would not spend any money, not give, provide for anyone. So once he lost all his money, then people showed their hate for him more. They insulted him, they abused him. He really suffered a lot. But he took sannyas mentally, at least, and he detached himself from the whole material world, and he took shelter of the super soul, the Lord in the heart. So, Paramatma Nishta. So, he describes that by taking shelter, there's a famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a mantra which is chanted by sannyasi. We may be chanting the holy name, but to chant the holy name purely, we have to also have some understanding of the philosophy. And if we understand the philosophy, then we will be able to improve. His tolerance was really tested. And the only way he could overcome, the only way he could go on and tolerate everything was by being fixed in the Paramatma, being fixed in the Lord in the heart. So we have to put this verse on a thread, string it around our neck for remembrance. It is so important for us to chant the holy name.